I've started to get the feeling very recently that political psychology is becoming a hot topic, which has never really happened in my career. So I'm extremely excited for that. And I think John joining Skip as co-PI of the American National Election Studies is one sign of that. And this conference is another. So I'm grateful and very, very pleased. So thank you for allowing me to be part of it too. As most of you probably know, the end of ideology was declared more than a generation ago by a small but esteemed group of sociologists and political scientists who, after the ideological struggle in the middle of the 20th century between fascism and communism, were more than glad to see it go. The general thesis of their work, and this really grew out of the work of Daniel Bell, Philip Converse, Seymour Lipsitt, Raymond Aron, and Edward Shills, was that by the 1950s, both the political right and the left had been equally discredited, and that a kind of exhaustion of political ideas had taken place in the West. Ideological distinctions, it was suggested, were devoid of social and psychological significance for most people, especially in the United States, but also elsewhere. There's a voluminous end of ideology literature, including these four books and lots of other articles and book chapters. But my reading of this literature, why is the computer shutting down? The end of the ideology people are still at it. The end of the end. This is the end of the end of the end of ideology here. Yeah, exactly. What should I do here?
We could take our break now.
What do you think? Oh, did it get plugged out? Unplugged. Okay, so the computer didn't go to sleep. It just got disconnected from the projector. Hey, it's back. Okay, thank you. Yeah, the beginning of the end of the end of the other one. Thank you, Brian. Thank you. So my reading of this voluminous literature has led me to distill four major claims, which I've sought to address in an American Psychologist article that just was published this past week. So when you get back to your place, it might be in your mailbox. The first of these four claims grew out of Converse's favorite argument, and people made allusions to it yesterday, that ordinary citizens' political attitudes lack the kind of logical consistency and internal coherence that would be expected if those attitudes were neatly organized according to ideological schemata. The second and related claim is that most people are unmoved by ideological appeals and that abstract labels associated with liberalism and conservatism lack motivational potency and behavioral significance. The third claim is that there are really no substantive differences in terms of philosophical or ideological content between liberal and conservative points of view. So Shills, for example, famously mocked the left-right distinction as rickety, spurious, and obsolete. And that was 50 years ago. The fourth claim, which first emerged as a criticism of Adorno et al.'s book on the authoritarian personality, is that there are no important differences in the psychological processes or styles that underlie ideological orientations such as liberalism and conservatism. And these four claims have had an extraordinary degree of impact, perhaps I would suggest an excessive degree of impact on the social and behavioral sciences. And my thinking is that it's time to revisit them in light of changing political realities, especially but not exclusively since 9/11, and recent data, especially but not exclusively psychological data. The end of ideologists were so successful that my students often ask me, now, more than 40 years later, whether ideological constructs such as left and right or liberalism and conservatism are relevant, meaningful, and useful. And my answer, as you will see, is yes. So I've basically been trying to deal with the massive skepticism that John mentioned correctly, I think, summarized yesterday. So I want to say at least a bit about each of these four claims, recognizing, of course, that each is very complicated and has a long history in political science. I obviously can't do the issues total justice here in 30 minutes. Those of you who are interested in more details of the argument, can check out the American Psychologist article, and I'd be happy to email it to you if you would just send me a reminder. Okay, concerning the first claim, I do think that it's relevant to point out that the strong version of Converse's thesis applies much better to the 1950s, which is the period in which the public opinion data that he analyzed were collected, than to subsequent historical periods.